from Portland, Oregon. This is the Jewish Review Podcast. I'm Rockney Roll. Coming up this episode, today's title includes a Hebrew phrase which means from generation to generation. It comes up in numerous contexts, but today, just before Yom HaShoah, Israel's day of commemoration for the victims of the Holocaust, we're using it to frame the after effects of the Holocaust on the families of survivors. To start off, I spoke with Sue Wendell and Debbie Montrose, sisters whose parents both survived the Holocaust. My conversations with the two were recorded separately, and they each shared their individual experiences in their childhood and the years after. Later, I welcome Naomi Derner, all four of whose grandparents were Holocaust survivors, to talk about the unique experiences of the people who were called 3Gs, short for third generation survivors. Each of these conversations touches on what generational trauma means, the challenges in survivor families, and the value each has found in connecting with others of similar backgrounds. Stay with us. The Jewish Review Podcast is brought to you by the Jewish Federation of Greater Portland and Dignity Grows. A program of the Federation's Women's Philanthropy, Dignity Grows provides menstrual and basic hygiene supplies to those in our community who need them most through their signature supply totes, packed by volunteers at packing parties like the one coming up Sunday, May 18th at Roschnitzer Manor in Portland. Learn more about Dignity Grows and May's packing event at jewishportland.org/dignitygrows. Now let's get started with Sue Wendell. Sue Wendell, welcome to the Jewish Review Podcast.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for being here. So tell me about your Jewish journey.
My Jewish journey, I never questioned my Jewishness. I was born Jewish. I always accepted that. And as is true, it's different for everybody. I went to Sunday school. We celebrated the holidays. We went to services. My mom was in the choir. My dad was more reserved, but we just felt like a Jewish family. It's a never-ending journey, really.
It truly is. So along that journey, you're the child of at least one Holocaust survivor. I don't know the specifics of your family, but when did you first notice the effects of the Holocaust playing out in your family life?
I think the effects... growing up, it came in layers. Mm-hmm. I think at a very young age, I knew that something bad had happened to my parents, but I didn't really know what. And then I noticed that my mom had these numbers on her arm. And I remember asking her about them when I was really little. And I share this little anecdote. Before she would go out somewhere, she would take it was a lipstick, but it was flesh toned, and she would smear it over these series of numbers on her arm. And one time, either I or one of my sisters asked her, well, what are those numbers on your arm? And I was about probably 5 years old or so. And her reply was, that's just Hitler's phone number. And I just went like, okay, I was 5 years old. I went off and played. So there was always like something in the air about it. As we got older, she would tell us stories about her experiences, but mostly focusing on her life before the Holocaust. Mm-hmm. And how lovely it was. And she would talk about her friends and her family and so on. My dad, who is also a survivor of Dachau. So my mom was a survivor of Auschwitz, Bergen-Belsen. My dad was in Dachau in 1939 for a few months. And he didn't talk about it very much. He would just say things like, you'll never know what hunger is. But he preferred to just handle his past in a different way. Mm-hmm. And I did notice that difference growing up.
Were there things that you noticed in your family dynamics in your childhood that you sort of later realized, oh, this is because my parents were Holocaust survivors?
You know, it's hard to unpack that. My dad grew up in an orphanage. Mm-hmm. And so he was very careful about not wasting food, for example, and not spending a lot of money. He just wanted a very simple life. My mother, on the other hand, grew up in Sighet, Romania, in a more probably middle-class family, and she loved traveling, and, you know, we moved from a small house to a bigger house to a bigger house. She didn't have any problem spending money, and there was always this tension between my parents, but it's hard to know directly how their experiences in the Holocaust affected that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for my mom, maybe it was, I almost died, so I'm going to live life to the fullest. For my dad, it could have been, I want to live a quiet life and do my best to raise my family, but not, you know, have a lot of attention on me.
Yeah. So you're one of the leaders of the Next Generations group here in Portland for Holocaust survivors and their descendants. How did that get started, and in what ways is that group active in communal life here in Portland?
So my involvement with the Next Generations group began probably around 2009, 2010, when my cousin, Diana Lindemann, came back from a conference that includes survivors from all over the world, survivors and their descendants. And she felt like it was important to start something in Portland. So she knew that I had a background in communications and graphic design and so on. So she asked me to kind of help her with the communications part of the group. And we decided to have it be educational, social, and service projects. And so for the last, you know, almost 20 years now, a little less than 20 years, we've been having these events, bringing together survivors, learning that there are child survivors, people who identify as child survivors, certainly second generation, third generation. And then we also had people who said they really believe in our mission to keep these stories alive and relevant. They're not even necessarily Jewish, but the Holocaust had really impacted them in some way. And so we opened our group to members, in quotes, members like that.
Was forming the Next Generations group your first experience really connecting with other children of Holocaust survivors, or had you had the opportunity to do that previously?
You know, I really did not connect with other children of Holocaust survivors. And what's was most interesting is that when people started coming to our, we call them get-togethers, our events, I knew people that I had known in grade school, in high school, in college, who were children of Holocaust survivors, but it was never, ever a part of my relationship with these people. So it was really amazing to discover that I had grown up with these kids whose parents were survivors.
Mm-hmm. So when you started to have conversations with them about their experiences growing up as the children of survivors, what were some of the things you noticed either that were really similar to your own lived experience or that were really different from how you grew up?
I think what I noticed is that there is a complete continuum of how children of survivors are raised and how they feel about being second generation, how their parents' experiences affected them. It's the whole gamut. I was lucky. My sisters and I were lucky in that my parents did not have anger and hatred as a dominant characteristic of our relationship. Unfortunately, some of the children of survivors I have met were raised in a different kind of atmosphere. And obviously, when you're raised in that type of atmosphere, you're going to have some lingering emotional struggles. I was lucky, but each descendant, really, it's very unique. It's yeah. unique to each of us.
Well, we hear the words generational trauma used a lot in the context of Holocaust survivors and their families and the generations that follow on. It really sounds like that's what you're talking about, is that kind of experience.
Yeah, there's this whole thing about epigenetics, and we've had speakers talk to us about that. And the transmission of trauma and how that manifests in a child's personality. It's a quite amazing field of study. You know, this idea that we have genes and sometimes they're turned on and sometimes they're turned off, and it can be a result of either literally genetics or the environment. It's very complicated for sure.
Yeah. So let me make sure I've got this right. Like the lived experience somebody goes through can activate certain genetic formations, for lack of a better word. And I'm not a genetic scientist, obviously, but that, and then that is something that they then pass on, not as a matter of like family history, like the way we think about history being passed from parent to child, but it literally baked into their DNA.
Yes, I'm not a scientist, but you put that very well, but don't quote me.
Well, putting things well is what I'm good at. So hopefully, I put that accurately, because that's just the idea of that is almost mind-boggling to me. But I think when you're talking about some of the experiences you've seen in other descendants of Holocaust survivors, that's really borne out in evidence.
Yeah, I think what I see mostly, though, is the effects of the environment. Like, mm-hmm. in my example, my parents weren't angry or filled with hate. I know some people whose parents were very angry and filled with hate, and that transmits emotionally to the child. And then the child can be very anxious and nervous and afraid. So I feel more competent about talking about that as opposed to epigenetics, but I have read a little bit about how genes are expressed or not.
Yeah. Looking forward to the next generation after yours, what are some of the ways you've seen or maybe haven't seen the effects of the Holocaust and being from a family descended from survivors, seen that borne out in your children?
So that's a really interesting question, because there's been some research on the differences between second generation and third generation. Mm-hmm. So a second generation has parents and they are directly witnesses of their parents' trauma, right? Third generation, it's their grandparents, and it's a whole different dynamic. And you have this relationship of grandparent to grandchild is really different than a child to a parent, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And so there's a whole movement now, a national movement, very well organized, third generation. And they have established this organization, you know, using technology and using communication and all the stuff I wish my generation could have done, but we haven't done it like third generation is doing. So there's a lot of hope that these stories are going to stay alive and relevant, and that maybe more grandchildren of survivors are going to become interested in knowing their grandparents' story to better understand, you know, what happened. And of course, the phrase, it should never happen again.
Looking in a mirror almost today, what are some of the ways, if any, that you still see the effects of the Holocaust, of you being the child of a survivor, play out in your own life?
I think one of the main things that has happened to me since October 7th is many survivors and child survivors who are in their 80s, right? 80s and 90s, mm-hmm. are extremely worried and fearful about what's happening today in the world. I mean, some of them have said this feels like pre-war Germany, you know, and they're triggered really by world events. And we, as a result, worked with Jewish Family and Child Services to have a special discussion group for child survivors and second generation. And this topic came up a lot, you know, so that's one of the effects, I think, of having a background, being raised by survivors. you see this happening, this expression of worry and fear.
Yeah, and it really hits home just because of the parallels to history and to the worst parts of human history.
Yeah, kind of feels that way.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you coming to take the time to talk about it, even factoring in that these are some of the worst parts of human history that we're going over. Sue Wendell, thank you so much for joining us on the Jewish Review Podcast.
Well, thank you for having me.
You can learn more about the Next Generations Group in Portland at their website, nextgenerationsgroup.wordpress.com. There's a link in the episode notes. If you're listening to this on release day, you may be interested in a commemoration service for Yom HaShoah, sponsored by the Oregon Board of Rabbis and the Oregon Jewish Museum and Center for Holocaust Education, this evening at 6:15 p.m. at Congregation Neve Shalom in Portland. Now let's hear from Debbie Montrose. Debbie Montrose, welcome to the Jewish Review Podcast.
Thank you.
So tell me about your Jewish journey.
What first comes to mind is my Jewish journey started at birth because both my parents are Jewish. And so that made me Jewish. And that's where it started. And as far as activities and that type of thing or lifestyle, my parents being both survivors of the Holocaust just always loved to celebrate the holidays, and we would go to synagogue every week because my mother was in the choir. So that brought us to synagogue every single Friday night. And the rest is very basic. They weren't terribly religious. They liked, Mom always said, they love the cooking, they love the holidays, they love the traditions. And that's what we did.
So when did you first notice the effects of the Holocaust in your family or on your family?
Well, I always knew my parents had accents, and so, but I didn't really ask. I was too much of a kid that was into my own playtime and friends, mm-hmm. and my parents were never strict enough to restrict any of that. And we were good kids, so we didn't get into trouble. We were, you know, good kids. Kids, the four daughters there were. I'm number three of four. I did not know for sure. I mean, I kind of knew because a lot of my parents' friends had accents, mm-hmm. and I knew they were foreign here, but nobody ever really, in my house, my upbringing, nobody really ever, I don't remember being told about it. I didn't, in those days, we did not learn in school. Or Sunday school, nothing about the Holocaust. And I did not miss one day of Sunday school in 8 years.
But nothing nothing about the Holocaust at all.
Nothing. In high school, we had to watch a film. And I remember it was a black and white footage of hands sticking out of a rail cattle car. Mm-hmm. But I remember thinking this, if I didn't learn about this in Sunday school, then it must not be that big of a deal to Jewish people. They said something about Jewish people in the film, but it didn't register because no one in my religion or home ever mentioned it, ever, never. Well, I learned about why later, why that was.
Why was
from
that?
From a rabbi. When it was 50 years after the liberation of Auschwitz, mm-hmm. Rabbi Stanford had a sermon and was basically apologizing with tears, saying that there was something called crisis shock. Sorry,
you're
that
right.
Holds
okay.
when people have suffered a huge crisis. It takes about, or not just people, but cultures. Mm-hmm. It takes about 50 years to deal with it. And so his big apology was, he was sorry never to have approached survivors, never done enough to help them. And that resonated with me as to why nobody talked about it in my parents' generation, survivors and refugees that came. And the reason I know that part is because I was secretary of the survivors group that met to build the memorial, right? Mm-hmm. was our mom, Alice Kern, who one day in 1994 said, "We have to have a memorial in Portland, Oregon." She had been living down here in the desert, and they built one here. And she said, when they moved back to Portland in 94, she said, "We have to have one in Portland too." And she said, "Debbie, you have to come take minutes." And I'm like, "Oh God, Mother, please, I can't have time for this." But I did, and I'm so grateful I did. But one of the things I learned was, little by little, when the survivors that would meet monthly to talk about these plans would say, nobody ever asked us. No one took care of us when we came here. You know, nobody. We couldn't meet the refugees group. The JCC would not have them. They had to meet and rent a space downtown somewhere. They didn't know what to do with us, is what my mom would say. But us four daughters, we were pretty lucky because our parents never laid heavy guilt on us like some second generation children had on them. Like, they never said, "Oh, we had to starve, so you better, you know, you have no idea what suffering is," and blah, blah, blah. They never did that with us, ever, ever, ever. They wanted us to be like everybody else. And if we had, one of the things that I remember knowing my parents were foreigners was because I asked a question about, "Mom, you know, what should I do if, you know, this person or that person, whatever, did this or whatever?" And she said, "Go ask your friends. We're not American. We don't know how Americans do it." Or like, if I asked her for advice, "How do I handle? Don't ask your friends. We're not Americans. Oh, we don't know how Americans do it." Okay. And I did.
Well, you mentioned some of this, but when you were able to start connecting with other second generation survivors, what were some of the experiences that you heard about like?
I didn't hear about any. I had one of mom's friend's daughters was my age. We would always get together with their family and our family. But we never talked about the fact that we were second generation in those days. It just, I mean, I knew that their parents were foreign like my parents. And I thought she was kind of strange in those days. But not just kind of kvetchy, you know, nothing major. But, and I know now that she had a very different upbringing than we did. And that's probably why she was the way she was.
Different in what way?
Just angry, always complaining. Nothing was good enough. Nothing was right.
This was how her parents acted.
I don't
her.
Know if they had that effect on her or not, but she was just not always. She was happy. We would do stuff and we'd laugh and we'd have fun. But if it came to anything, she seemed like didn't get along with her mother very well, and was always arguing and that type of a thing. But other than that, we never. Nobody I knew until I was way into my adult talked about what it was like to be a next generation. For me, it never came into conversation.
When you were an adult, what did those first started having those conversations, what did those look like?
My cousin had gone to, when I was helping the survivors, I was very connected to them. I felt like they were all my parents. Any of them could have been my parent. There's so much in common. But when one of their daughters attended a descendants gathering convention and came back and started talking about how amazing it was and how she felt connected for the first time in her life with a group of people her own age that have the same basic issues of upbringing with survivor parents. That's when I realized, oh, there must be some commonality between us. But none of my best friends were second generation growing up. And I still keep in contact with many of them, but none of them are from survivor parents.
Yeah. So when we hear the word generational trauma a lot when we talk about the descendants of Holocaust survivors. When you hear that, what comes to mind?
That's not me. Unless I mean, more and more, there's a lot coming out now in reading, writing, and hearing about it. There wasn't early on.
Yeah.
We didn't know. I mean, we always knew that there was something there, but we
just
didn't
have a name until recently.
No. What happened the other day? Well, it was about the news that was on TV recently. I mean, I quit watching completely, but the anger that I felt when hearing screaming, loud, demonstrative bully speech, that really bothered me. And my husband said, "You know, Debbie, what is wrong? You know, what? I've never seen you like this." And I said, "Ooh, I think maybe I'm thinking about what my parents had to listen to back in 1938, 39, 40, 41.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, because physiologically, look what it does to me just to think about it. And what could happen. Yeah.
Yeah, that's the similarities to history are always troubling when they evoke that kind of period of time.
And the only reason I can think that it hit me so deeply is because I've heard other survivors talk about what it felt like to them. And in my mom's case or my dad's case, it was more sudden, so they didn't really have the chance to remember that, you know, what their parents did, you know, when they witnessed what their parents were responding to. My cousin has told us how she responded at age 5 and hearing screaming on the radio and her parents crying, you know, that type of thing. So I hear that, and that was more recent that I've heard those kinds of stories. And then I've heard my cousin say, you know, those things back to us when she started feeling those feelings 8 years ago in this country. And so what did we do? You know, our logical educational minds, the second generations group, we called the historian who wrote all of the history on the wall at the memorial. And we asked him to meet with us in front of that wall so he could help us hopefully ensure to us that it can't happen here, because some of us are starting to feel like that here. And he did. So it was more, this is what we can do with this, not just, oh, it's happening. It's I'm feeling terrible.
Yeah.
So now with this, for me, this brand new reaction that I've just had not too long ago, maybe a couple months now, is helping to participate in all of the, you know, not so much hands-on, but sometimes protests and the writing to our Congress people and making sure they know how we feel and this is not right and stuff like that. So that's how I'm dealing with it.
Yeah. I think that's a pretty healthy way to deal with it by and large.
Yeah. That first outburst, though, really woke me up because I didn't know I had it in me to be so upset.
Yeah. So when you got older into adulthood and you were working with your mom and others to build the memorial here in Portland, were you finally able to have conversations with her about her experiences?
You know, I never did because she wrote it down. She wrote a book that was published in 1989. And all the years growing up, I don't know if my sisters will remember like I do too, but She'd wait in the car when she'd drop us off for swimming or ballet lessons or wherever, and she'd be scribbling in this notebook. And, you know, I never asked her what it was. I was, you know, I didn't know. I didn't care. But I found out when I was 22 years old, after my older sister, somehow she participated in having that, all those papers typed out. And I read them. And it was a summer before I started work because I graduated from my professional school and then I started working in like September. So I read this thing and I'm like, oh my God, I had no idea. Wow. You know, now I know why we're so different, because I didn't know. And mom wrote this down. She wrote every memory she could remember. And there's a whole nother story of why that happened. But for me, I felt like I never really could talk with her. We never really could. She she didn't open up to us as much on those things. I don't know if my older sister was able to get any, if she had questions, but I just didn't. I just knew that they were there. Now I read about everything that she remembered happening, and I know what happened, and I know how she felt, and I just didn't need to ask. I didn't need to bring it out of her anymore, I felt.
Do you have kids,
But
Debbie?
I hope to.
Do you think that the experience of your parents in the Holocaust has had any impact on them now as third generation
I
survivors?
took them to when they were, I can't remember now how old they were, but I took them back to my mother's hometown because there was a delegation invited of survivors and next generations, and it was organized by a group in Israel. But we were connected with the lady that was in charge because she was from my mom's hometown, and they had been corresponding over the years. So when I found out about it, my mom had already just passed away. I took the kids and we went on this delegation. So they were around grandkids of survivors, all from the same town. So they
Which
were
town is that?
Sighet, Romania.
Okay.
And so when we went there and we saw her home and we saw the synagogue where she would go, all of that she described in her book, that was kind of meaningful for me. But I think that we've never really talked about it since, but I think it might have had an effect.
I imagine it did in some way or another. I mean, it clearly had an impact on you.
Yeah,
Just
totally.
that connection to history and memory and family. Well, that's a really powerful experience to share with them. I'm glad you were able to share that, and
I'm so grateful it happened and we could do it. It
I'm
was really amazing.
glad you've been able to share your experiences with me today. Debbie Montrose, thank you so much for joining us on the Jewish Review podcast.
You're very welcome. Thank you for doing this.
Just after we finished recording, Debbie sent me a note which said, "When you had asked if I had ever spoken with my mom about her experiences, I know why I didn't, at least after she began speaking to students and other audiences when I would accompany her. After her so freely telling her story to them, I realized how difficult it must have been for her to tell us. And since I listened to her presentations, I truly felt that I didn't need to ask. I think it would have been so much more difficult for her to do that, and for me to hear, than it was for her to speak to her audiences, who were always so quiet you could hear a pin drop. And their questions and hugs afterward were so healing for our mom." She added that, "I believe too that survivors may feel they didn't wish to burden their children, and that their children felt that discomfort, and so didn't ask too many detailed questions of them." Let's skip ahead a generation now and hear from Naomi Derner. Naomi Derner, welcome to the Jewish Review podcast.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
It's my pleasure. So tell me about your Jewish journey.
My Jewish journey. Okay, well, I was born into a household of two Jewish parents, one who was raised secular, one who was raised Orthodox, but my father abandoned the Orthodox religion once he turned 18. And by the time I came around, my parents were pretty secular. However, I grew up in Brooklyn, New York, where Judaism is a little bit in the water, in a neighborhood. For most of my childhood, I lived either in or directly adjacent to a Jewish neighborhood. And all my grandparents lived in Brooklyn within a mile or two of me. So in my house, we were non-practicing. My grandparents were Orthodox, so I witnessed that. I attended a Jewish day school as a little kid and then public school for the rest of my schooling. When I grew up, as an adult, I was very, very secular. I didn't practice Judaism at all, didn't go to synagogue. As a kid, I didn't really go to synagogue except occasionally with my Orthodox grandparents. And then when, I married a non-Jew and we had two kids, and my now ex-husband was raised Catholic, but did not want to practice his religion. So we were pretty just secular. Like, I think we had a Christmas tree a couple of years, and I think we also lit Hanukkah candles, and that I think that was the entirety of our religious practice. But I don't know, when my kids were about 8 or 10, I realized that two things happened. One is that I realized that I didn't provide them with any knowledge about being Jewish. And in Portland, it's much more difficult to be Jewish by osmosis than it is in Brooklyn, New York, where I grew up.
Strangely enough.
And so I realized that, I was kind of setting them up to just be completely unknowledgeable about their heritage, regardless of whether or not we or they practiced any religion. And two, that was around the time when my last grandparent passed away, and all four of my grandparents were Holocaust survivors. And I just started to think about, why it might be important to teach my kids, just what being Jewish means, again, regardless of whether or not they were going to practice. So we joined a synagogue. I put my kids through B'nai Mitzvah training. Now, we're part of a Reform synagogue, part of Congregation Beth Israel here in Portland. And at home, we light Shabbat candles. I bake challah. I'd say we're, vaguely Reform family.
Yeah. So, speaking of that family and going back through those generations, when did you first notice personally the effects of the Holocaust on your family, and what did that look like?
Well, gosh, I mean, I feel like I knew that my grandparents were Holocaust survivors before I even knew what the Holocaust was. My parents always kind of explained my grandparents being different as, they're old-fashioned, they're from the old country, they're Holocaust survivors. But there wasn't a whole lot of explanation around that. They had accents, obviously. They had, my one set of grandparents from Poland, the other from Hungary, they had strong accents, and they cooked food that were different than a lot of my neighbors. I grew up, at least part of my childhood, in a pretty Italian neighborhood and knew the cooking was quite different. But as far as being, Holocaust survivors, I didn't really know what that meant, except that I didn't know a lot about my grandparents' background. So a lot of my friends would talk about their grandparents and how they're, prior generations to their grandparents, or, about their grandparents' childhood, or, knew that their grandparents grew up in that same house that they were living in now. So I didn't know anything about my grandparents. They didn't talk about it. Nobody talked about it. And it was normal to not talk about it in my family. And what I learned over time is that that's kind of a normal thing to happen in 3G families, is that nobody talks about the grandparents' background.
Yeah. What did you later learn your grandparents' background or more about their history?
I did, but it was basically once they were all gone and through my own research. So as a child, I knew one set of grandparents were from Poland and that they were, quote unquote, in the war, but there was really no explanation as to what that meant. And so I didn't know their history until later. And my Hungarian grandparents, I couldn't have even told you what country they were from, which is odd when you think about it. I knew very little about their history. And so what got me interested in this is right around the time my Hungarian grandmother died, I got an ad. I got like an email ad from, I think it was ancestry.com, that says, "Did your grandparents go through Ellis Island? Check here for their immigration card." And I thought, gosh, I bet they must have gone through Ellis Island, right? I mean, how else would they have gotten here? So let me check. And there, wouldn't you know it, their immigration card did come up. On it said that my grandmother had come from some city I had never heard of. And I looked it up, and it was Poking Pine, and it was a displaced persons camp in Germany. And suddenly I was like, why would my grandmother be coming from a displaced persons camp in Germany? So just to back up for a second, the only thing I knew about my Hungarian grandparents was that they were Holocaust survivors, but they hadn't been in the camps. Nobody told me where they had been, but I just knew they hadn't been in the camps. So when I started my research, the first thing I found out is that my grandmother and my grandfather had been in a displaced persons camp in Germany. And so that opened a lot of questions for me as to why were they there and what were they doing there. I didn't even know what a displaced persons camp was. So that started me on my journey to where I did figure out quite a bit about both sets of grandparents.
So going back for a moment, when you talked about things that were of your grandparents' mannerisms and ways of being that were, attributed to, oh, they're from the old country, or they're a Holocaust survivor, did there become a point where you noticed what you knew was because they were from the old country and what might have been different specifically because they were Holocaust survivors?
Well, for one, we really didn't have any extended family. And nobody ever talked about why we would have no extended family. So on one side, on the Polish side, my grandfather didn't have a single living relative. I learned that later, but that explained why I never met a relative of him. No, I also never heard him talk about any relatives of his, mm-hmm. which again is something that as a 3G is not uncommon to experience if, you know, if your grandparents are a survivor. My Polish grandmother did have a few of her siblings left after the war. She was from a family of about 11, and she, I think, had 4 or 5 left after the war. And I did grow up with some of those people. And then on the Hungarian side, there's almost no family, and there was no explanation. You know, on my Hungarian grandparents, they were very nervous people, to yeah. say the least. My grandmother would talk, and if she was talking about any sort of subject she considered even the least bit sensitive, even in her own house, she would talk in whispers and away from the window. She didn't trust people outside the Jewish community, to be honest. She lived in a very Jewish neighborhood and didn't trust people outside the Jewish community. And, you know, those were the type of things that I did notice. And as a teenager, it started to dawn on me that that might be because they're Holocaust survivors. They seem to worry a lot about anti-Semitism. And in the 1980s in New York City, I didn't personally witness a whole lot of anti-Semitism, so it seemed overblown and very old-fashioned and something that, you know, was specific to them as Holocaust survivors. So those are a few of the things that I noticed, you know, at the time.
You are one of the organizers for 3GPNW, a local group for third-gen survivors. How did that group come together, and how is it active in the community for those who are unaware, perhaps?
So 3GPNW, 3G Pacific Northwest, is we're a newish group. We officially launched about a year ago. Me and my co-founder, Dan Sharp, launched it here in Portland. And, you know, the history of it, it goes back, gosh, now about 12 years when I started my research on my grandparents' stories. I connected with this group that at the time was through the Oregon Jewish Museum called Next Generations Group. Mm-hmm. And that was a group, you know, meant for 2Gs, for children of survivors, for 3Gs, for friends. You know, it was a supportive little group. There were some survivors in it as well. So I joined, and that group really helped me put my story together. Now, over the years, that group really grew into something much bigger, and it, you know, really started to focus on 2Gs. And so some 3Gs started to come to some events or contact the group with interest. But, you know, there's a big age gap between the 2Gs and the 3Gs. You know, the 2Gs are, for the most part, baby boomer age. You know, I'm a Gen X, and I'd say that Gen Xers are on the older side of the 3G community, that it's really millennial age group. So I was encouraged by the survivors and the next gen folks to start my own group. So that way we could, you know, just appeal to 3Gs. Also, there really is a big difference in the issues that the 2Gs and the 3Gs face. Growing up as a 2G is a much different experience for a lot of people than growing up as a 3G. And so, you know, and part of that is, as a 3G, you had a 2G as a parent. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be differences in the interests in that group and the type of support they need. So I had been encouraged to start a 3G group, but I just dragged my heels a little bit. I was pretty busy with work and kids and all sorts of things. But then I was asked to be a part of this group that was going to start a 3G national organization. It was started, I believe, by two people from the 3G New York group, which is a large, very mature, super active, engaged group of people in New York City. And they had started a national, I guess, task force to try to establish a national nonprofit group specifically for 3Gs. Mm-hmm. Anyway, long story short, Living Links launched about a year ago as a national organization. It's partnered with the USC Shoah Foundation and has hired an executive director and is now serving as an umbrella group to support all the local 3G groups. So I had a little bit waited to formally launch the group so we could, you know, do so with the support of a national organization providing us assistance. And so that's what I did.
All right. What are some of the activities 3GPNW has put on so far?
We we've done a few things. You know, we've attended a few films that are related to 3G. Most recently, the 3G film, A Real Pain, with Jesse Eisenberg and Karen Culkin. And that was fun. We also last year did this event that we're repeating this year, a satellite event of Ride for the Living, which is an event that comes out of Poland, out of JCC Krakow. The event in Poland, you know, in support of JCC Krakow, Ride for the Living, is where folks ride from Auschwitz to Krakow. It's about 60 miles, you know, in commemoration of the victims at Auschwitz. Mm-hmm. And in, you know, as a fundraiser for JCC Krakow, and they encourage folks to have their own local events and support either that organization or a local organization. So last year we did that. We had our own events. Instead of riding, we walked. We walked from the Oregon Jewish Museum up to the Holocaust Memorial in the park. We had a wonderful docent-led tour of the memorial, the Holocaust Memorial. Then we walked back. It was a lot of fun. We're going to do it again this year at the end of June. And so those, you know, those are a couple of things we've done so far. The other thing that we're doing, as well as we're participating in the speaker training that's being offered through Living Links, and it's a virtual training where 3Gs can put their grandparents' story together into a presentation that is appropriate to present in schools or in other groups. And that's a really important function of Living Links. And also it will be an important function of 3GPNW, which is to prepare the next generation, to prepare, you know, 3Gs to be speakers. Mm-hmm. You know, there are very few Holocaust survivors who can actively speak anymore in schools. And even the 2Gs are starting to age a little bit. And, you know, it's time for us to step up as a generation. And so, you know, we have a few people locally already who have gone through the training and now can speak in schools. I went through the training a while ago, and so I'm going through it again next month to fine-tune my presentation again. And so we're hoping other 3Gs want to join us in this, and will also choose to tell their story.
Absolutely. So you talked about earlier, and I'm hoping you'll be able to expand upon some of the commonalities that third-gen survivors have in their experiences with their families.
So I find, you know, when I meet 3Gs, they seem to fall into two groups. The one group is actually the smaller group, and that's people whose grandparents were extremely open about their experience in the Holocaust. Maybe grandma wrote a book. Or maybe she just told, maybe she's been speaking in school since the 1970s, as long as, you know, as the 3G can remember, even before they were born. Or maybe they didn't even do it till, maybe it was not till the 1990s or later. But whatever the case, this 3G has grown up always knowing their grandparents' story, knowing a lot of detail about it, you know, and so it's very much out in the open. That, like I said, is a smaller group of people. The larger group of people that I meet are people like me, who grew up just with this shadow kind of hanging over called, you know, the Holocaust, that you knew affected this person or these people in your family, but, you know, there wasn't a whole lot of context given, whether it was because you didn't really learn what the Holocaust was until you read Anne Frank, you know, Diary of Anne Frank in middle school, or took World War II history in high school. Maybe that's how you learned about the Holocaust. But regardless, you knew that grandma or grandpa or everybody was a Holocaust survivor, and this cloud kind of hung over. Nobody talked about it. You maybe didn't know a lot of information. Some people know nothing about their grandparents' history. I knew almost nothing about my Hungarian grandparents. I learned almost everything from historical records after they passed away, and had to tell my own parents about their parents' experience. So that's super common. And so what that leads to in that second group is a lot of similarities on difficulties in family dynamics, because becomes this culture of secrecy and of not talking about, you know, how the Holocaust may have impacted grandma or grandpa. As a lot of people know or may have heard, there's definitely people, there's belief that there's patterns of anxiety, depression, and other types of mental illness that's more prevalent in you know, in 2 and 3 Gs. And, mm-hmm. you know, when you see these communities, it's, you know, there are those commonalities that you see among other 3Gs.
So when we talk about generational trauma as a term in relation to the Holocaust, that's the kind of thing we're getting at.
Exactly. I mean, that's exactly what you're seeing. And the generational trauma not just mental illness, but just, family dysfunction, I think is a commonality. And what's interesting is that when you start talking to other 3Gs as a 3G, I always hear 3G say, gosh, that other person's family sounds just like mine, when they hear about a 3G's experience. The family dynamics definitely can be challenging.
Yeah. I have to ask what that experience was like telling your parents about their parents' history with them knowing little to nothing.
Well, that's also very interesting, and another commonality that 3Gs find. For example, my father was born, when I growing up, I had heard that my father was born in Germany, that his parents were survivors, then he was born in Germany. And that was the only explanation I was given. Now, it wasn't until I was much, much older I said, hey, why would a couple of Jewish Holocaust survivors have a baby in Germany? And when exactly was that? Because my father was born just a couple of years after World War II. So I did my research, and my research turned up that my father was born in a displaced persons camp in Germany. Neither his parents, these are the Hungarians, neither of them were in death camps, but my grandfather had been in Hungarian forced labor and then had ended up in German camps in Austria, a camp called Mauthausen, and eventually he was liberated by Americans at a camp called Gunskirchen, also in Austria. My grandmother had been in the Budapest ghetto when she was liberated, and they met, my grandparents met in this displaced persons camp in Germany. My father was born in a different displaced persons camp where they were actually in transit to the United States. So I was able to untangle all that. And I said to my father, I said, Dad, when I figured it out, I said, Dad, do you know where you were born? He says, Germany. I said, where in Germany? He says, oh, I don't know, a hospital. And I said, why were you in a hospital in Germany? He said, well, they were going to the US. And I was like, and what? They stopped and had a baby? He goes, I guess so. And I said, no, you were born and I showed him the timing. I was like, Grandma and Grandpa met in a displaced persons camp. They got married 2 months later. They had your sister, 11 months later, and then you were born, a year after that. And then, 2 months later, they left for the US and got to the US, when you were like 6 months old. And so I said that to him, and my mind was blown when I learned this information. And my father said, oh, okay. And then he kind of changed the subject. And that's a little bit what you find, what people who seek out 3G groups find when their minds are being blown by this information. And when they present it back to other members of their family, they're finding a lot of ambivalence and a little bit of disinterest. And I think it's just because people in these families are uncomfortable talking about the subject because their entire lives it's been this subject that you just can't really broach, with your own parents. And so they just, I feel like, wall it away a little bit.
Yeah, I can see how that would really lead to some dysfunction and real emotional challenges in those kind of relationships.
. Even like when I told my father that my grandfather had always was clear that he was never in the camps. Now, the thing about my grandparents, my Hungarian grandparents, their families were all from towns where, the entire towns essentially were emptied into Auschwitz and murdered. And so among the people from that part of the Europe, which is Subcarpathian Hungary, the camps refers very specifically to Auschwitz. And so my grandfather always said, I was not in the camps, I don't have a tattoo. However, he was actually in three camps. They weren't Auschwitz, they weren't death camps. He did not have a tattoo, it's true. But that's the type of thing that they would say, is we weren't in the camps, but you were. And so when I told my father this, I heard him relay it to somebody else as that he learned that his father was in a labor camp. I was like, I don't think Mauthausen was actually just a labor camp. I'm pretty sure it was at least a concentration camp, and I think it was considered one of the death camps, or there was extermination going on in that camp.
Looking now to today, what are some of the ways that you see that the effects of that dynamic, of that experience of being in a Holocaust survivor family, still kind of pop up in your life?
Well, I mean, when I learned about the experience of all my grandparents, when I learned a little more, and I had children, it just made me think, boy, it's just luck that I was born. I mean, my children were born in this generation, and not a few generations ago, we would have been in much different circumstance. Also, living in Portland, it's interesting. Like I said, I grew up in New York City. I knew a ton of Holocaust survivors. Everybody knew a Holocaust survivor in New York City. They were everywhere when I was growing up. They were very visible, especially people like Auschwitz survivors with the number on their arm. In Portland, I met people who have never met Jewish people. They have never met a Holocaust survivor. They've never met someone who ever met a Holocaust survivor. I was at a Thanksgiving dinner a few years back where the host asked us to go around and talk about our Thanksgiving tradition. What did our grandmother do for Thanksgiving? What was our grandmother's Thanksgiving tradition? And I said, my grandmother didn't really celebrate Thanksgiving. They were Holocaust survivors. They just kept their heads down and really just focused on Jewish holidays. And everybody at the table looked at me and said, "Your grandparents were Holocaust survivors, really?" And nobody at the table had ever met a hol you know had ever met somebody who was related to a Holocaust survivor. So I realized that, especially as we get further and further away from World War II, as Holocaust survivors, they're more dying every year. It's important to tell the story because, as we get further away, the denial increases.
Yeah, we've
People
already
are
started to see
denying it.
that.
And when I tell someone, especially out here in Oregon, where there aren't as many survivors or people who have met survivors, what my grandparents went through when they were teenagers during World War II, or in the case of my grandfather, he was a full adult, they're shocked, and it does make a difference. I tell the story and people could relate. They think of their own grandparents and, maybe what their grandparents' experience is, and say, "No, here I am. I'm standing here talking to you, and somebody that was as close to me as my grandparents went through this thing." And I think it's impactful. So
Absolutely.
I think just having that has made me want to tell the story as the world changes.
Well, I appreciate you taking the time to tell me your story. Naomi Derner, thank you so much for joining us on the Jewish Review Podcast.
Thanks very much, Rockne. Enjoyed it.
That's all for this episode of the Jewish Review Podcast. A deep, heartfelt thank you to Sue Wendell, Debbie Montrose, and Naomi Derner for their time and willingness to address this deeply personal subject. You can find out more about Naomi's organization, 3GPNW, at their website, 3GPNW.org. If you like this episode, please leave a 5-star review on the podcast platform of your choice to help others find our show. Click subscribe to get our latest episode every 2 weeks, and tell a friend. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions, please reach out by email to editor@jewishportland.org. Don't forget, you can get the latest news from Portland's Jewish community by subscribing to the Jewish Review for free online at jewishportland.org/Jewish Review. The Jewish Review podcast is a production of the Jewish Federation of Greater Portland. Our associate editor is Karone Blau-Rothstein. Assistant editor is Rachel Nelson. Special thanks to Daniel Berger. Our theme music is by Isaac Joel. I'm Rockne Roll. Thanks again for listening. Until next time, all the best.